Welcome to AFP. My name is Devang Desai, and I'm joined by the usual suspects, David Goss and Nick Andrade. On today's show, we chat Gold Cup semifinals, SKC edges Seattle out west, the CPL bubble wraps, plus, as always, it's your questions on Ask AFP. Gentlemen, how are we doing? David, how was your weekend?
Pretty good. I took actually a trip. This is like the second time I've flown in a year and a half or whatever, and I'm in the great city of San Francisco, which I called San Fran, and someone turned to me yesterday and said, not a big deal, but just so you know, people out here, they don't call it San Fran, they call it SF. So I will continue to call it San Fran for sure now, just to piss people off. And yeah, it's been good. I saw some family, and Devang, you know me, I'm all about family.
100% family. We've been raving about Fast 9, no spoilers, so we won't talk about that, but family forever. SF is infinitely worse than San Fran.
Yeah.
What in the world?
Right? Wow.
That Thank does you. Sound exactly like a very like SF kind of thing, though, that I could see.
You know, and it's, listen, I know it's really easy to pile on Silicon Valley, and they're the source of a lot of terrible things. But I think if the shoe fits, and this is just yet another example of it.
Totally agreed. I'm normally a fan of San Fran, but I'm not a fan of that. Although I have ate my face off in the like 36 hours I've been here.
Have you been to that baseball stadium?
I have. I'm not going this time, but I have in the past, and it's pretty epic.
It's on my list. I'm not a huge baseball guy, but it is on my list as just like an architectural sports place that looks
unique.
Okay,
so let me ask you
this.
I assume, have you been to Camden Yards or Pittsburgh?
I haven't been to Pittsburgh. I've been to Camden Yards.
Okay, so when you go for something like that, right, where you want to go to the stadium, do you stay for the full game?
If the Jays are playing, for sure. It is two auxiliary team, if it's the Baltimore Orioles and the Chicago White Sox, I mean, if the game is good, sure. But unless it's the team that I'm supporting playing, I'm not dedicating myself. Wrong, Nick. Okay, please. Wrong.
Yeah. You, in every sporting event I've ever been to, I have stayed until the very end. And I think it is a disrespect on the tickets that you purchased and the teams that are playing that you leave early.
So it's a disrespect to yourself. It's a disrespect to yourself for not allotting time properly for you to watch a bunch of Jags on some terrible baseball teams play because you happen to be in the same city, Nick. I don't think you'd have to stay there for 3.5 hours.
There's nothing I hate more than seeing all those people leaving in the middle of the bottom of the ninth inning because they have to take a train or they want to
get out there really quickly.
No, stay at all times.
And like in a close game in the ninth when that's happening, I'm joining you and yelling at those people. But I think there are situations where I'm not against someone watching a few innings and being like, you know what? The Kansas City Royals and the Arizona Diamondbacks will play another day and I don't need to watch them for the next 3 hours while I enjoy this city.
Fair.
I will add this, that I've reached the point where I fully possess the character that I drew for myself, where I came out here and you mentioned the Giants and I literally Googled to see if the Oakland Roots were playing a USL championship game while I'm here and was going to travel for that, but wasn't going to walk like 15 minutes to go see a San Francisco Giants game. So I am now the total hipster that I pretended to be whatever years ago.
Nick, how was your weekend, sir?
It was great. You know what? I got to say, if ever I'm not watching a TFC game or I'm missing it, I just go to my Twitter and I'll see how it's going based on Devang's tweets. And my favorite tweet of the weekend was, Luke Singh might not be ready, but I'm ready to see something different at the back. And I'm just picturing him behind his screen, pressing send and had a little smile on his face like, yeah, I did that.
It's sad because I was smiling. I was actually smiling. a big 7 like banger too. It's you know what though? It was tweeting from the heart, and I would think I'm giving you the updates though, Nick, because you probably tuned in.
I did after, and then I was going to tweet something. Actually, I did tweet something. And I deleted it because I felt silly. I said top 3 short kings of 2021. Number 1 was me. So I'm 5'6". Yeah. Number 2 was Jefferson Soteldo, and I forget who number 3 was, but when he dances and he scores, it is the most beautiful thing. It's just like a dance. You just want to like pinch his cheeks.
The dance was world class. The dance.
I got the pause. I'm sorry, guys.
I didn't see the pinch's cheeks part coming.
I tried to glide past it, but I guess we have to step. We have to talk about it.
Yeah. Yep.
He's adorable. You know, adorable. And the dance, I think, to me, and every money spent, any dollar spent, was solidified by that dance. We knew what we were getting there. I don't know if 5'6" gets you in that club though, Nick. I think I might be too tall.
Ooh, okay. No, we can talk about that. Sure.
I think so.
What's the cutoff for you guys?
5'5" is the cut, probably 5'5". I think.
So okay, I don't know. Right. I don't know if this is a U.S. thing, but I'm pretty sure what's considered in the U.S. average height for a male is 5'7". Ooh, okay. I think it's 5'7". Oh,
I think it's 5'8".
But I don't know if just being under that gets you in that, or you have to like really be under it.
At the risk
Canadians are taller than Americans on average.
At the risk of
Whoa.
I think this, at the risk of turning this into a 20-minute conversation, I dare think that we get back on the rails outside of the height topic. Want to shout out new patron, Jason. Thank you for joining us, Jason. We're really close now to our first goal for patrons. With that, when you join, you get exclusive access to episodes we do after international games featuring Canada, the US, and whoever else, which are coming fast and furious with the Gold Cup and World Cup qualifying. Plus, you get access to the Discord, where we're talking footy all the time, including before this show. You get access to this show earlier, just when it's created. Plus, you get it ad-free. So head on over to patreon.com/afootballpodcast and join us today. When we come back, Gold Cup action, Canada, Qatar, United States, Mexico, the Final Four, CONCACAF Elite, coming up next on AFP.
Stocchio ahead, Boylan scores! There's something about Junior Hoyland in these quarterfinals. Canada leads.
There you have it, Junior Hoyland. What a story, what a performance for Canada. 2-0 over Costa Rica for the first time in 14 years. Canada is back in the Gold Cup semifinals in a comprehensive masterclass performance on Sunday night. David, I'm not going to lie. I mean, there was a lot of positives, of course, but I think the ease of this game, perhaps, is the biggest takeaway for me. In terms of signposts and where this team is at, definitely a marker for them going forward to handle. I know not maybe the Costa Rica of old or the Costa Rica at their best, but still a formidable CONCACAF opponent. They checked all of the boxes you wanted to see.
It's a Costa Rica team that has won this game every time they've been in it, right? And so whether this is best, the best Costa Rica side or not, and yeah, I think this is the worst team we've seen since 2010 World Cup qualifying for them. The history says they win this game, and I think you just have to look at the U.S. This is not a great U.S. team, but they beat Jamaica, and a lot of that, I think, was on confidence and historical knowledge. And so Costa Rica had all of that going for them as well, and yet Canada was the team that looked like they'd been there before. That's what's huge about this game. Wasn't peaking, wasn't playing your best, the best style, wasn't having the best ideas or even the best players on the field. It was that they were the team that looked like they expected to win, and all they had to do was go out there and do their job. They didn't have to do anything special to get there, and then you add on top of the players you're missing, and that's what's amazing about this, I think. And I said it when I did some post-game stuff yesterday about it. Like, I think this is a bigger win than the Suriname and Haiti wins. Maybe not the Haiti series for World Cup qualifying, but for all of these players to now go into World Cup qualifying and say, not that, yeah, we have belief we can beat a Costa Rica, but no, we've done this before, is huge. And the guys who missed this, they don't need that, right? Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David already know that about themselves. But for Kamal Miller and Richie and Alistair Johnston and Eustáquio even, who hadn't really played much CONCACAF, for them to now have this, and not just against the Trinidad and Tobago or not against the Martinique, but against Costa Rica, one of the giants of the region, that is massive.
Costa Rica did not have a shot on goal in the entire game, which I think is one of the massive things to take away from this. Kamal Miller, who you mentioned, I thought was once again Canada's best defender. But on the players that were missing after the group stage, the tough news of Kyle Larin being unavailable, Io Akinola being unavailable, they called up Tesho Akindele, who ended up playing a bit at the end and having some real good looks at goal. Question was, what does Canada do from here? And like, who do they turn to forward-wise? Lucas Cavallini, the obvious shout. But I think Junior Hoilett, we talked about him now, I think since this not last round of qualifying began, DG, and how he was kind of the guy that, the person that had all of these caps in the Premier League, the person that had this influence, this status within the game in Canada, deciding to play for the country and marking a change for the program. Mm-hmm. We've called it poetry, but I'm sorry, it really wasn't. And what a goal. Like, I mean, the Eustáquio ball is first class, but Junior Hoilett showing that a guy who's out of contract and on the wrong side of 30, if you want to call it that, still has plenty left to give. And I heard them talking about it on the broadcast in terms of where you would fit right now. But I can think of plenty of teams right now in North America that wouldn't mind having him.
100%. And I, one of the ones that came to mind, just with the way he has interacted with this young generation and helped them, and I think been the right personality in the locker room to be fine not starting when he's not starting, but then being ready to come in and either, whether it's taking a more influential role, sliding central, sliding high, or going from not playing to playing, I think Montreal actually could be a good fit for him.
Mm.
Like this, it's a similar experience with those young players with what Wilfred Nancy is building. So I think that's one that they should be looking at as well. And obviously we mentioned Vancouver with him, although Ryan Gauld sounds like he's going to get done. And then I don't know if Junior Hoilett makes as much sense for them. But yeah, I love what he's done for this team. I love that he gets the goal. I love the way he steps up and has this big moment and how fun it looks when he scores. Like you can see everyone celebrating for him. And just his ability to mentally stay ready anytime John Herdman has called on him, carrying them against Bermuda, then coming off the bench at times against Haiti. He's just gone in and out and he's been everything you need him to be. And I think a huge part of that is he doesn't have to carry the team.
Yeah.
Right. You think back to the Honduras game at BC Place. I think it was 2018 World Cup qualifying. It felt like if it wasn't him, there wasn't chances coming. And now he can just be a part of the system.
And even though the second goal is a bit fortunate, Junior Hoilett is still creating that with his ability to kind of force the issue. Massive. Right.
Yeah. And that and you can't just watch the highlight. And obviously, you know, you watch it, you see the moment. If you look back, it was a 5-minute segment where Canada had upped their press. And so it wasn't just that moment. Canada had pushed Costa Rica deep and Costa Rica had started to lose confidence. And that 5-minute segment was, it seemed a clear a moment from Canada to say, let's press higher and let's win this thing. And they almost had a chance a few minutes before that. And then they continue to press high and create chances. I mean, Eustáquio, look at it, right? On the Hoilett ball, he's behind midfield. And for him to be that high, it was a clear moment where Canada all pressed as a unit. And they were really good that entire segment and they deserve that goal.
Like John Herdman said, for 70 minutes, they pressed at just an excellent caliber. And that takes an incredible amount of dedication. We talked about Junior Hoilett, I think the man of the match by all agreements, Stefan Eustáquio. I thought Marc-Anthony Kay was good, not great beside him. And I thought Oso was okay as well. But I think the standout and generally someone who's filled a bit of a void left by these injuries for me has been Eustáquio. And we're talking about the big three or the big two when it's David Davies. And then if we want to add Kyle Larin as the third, let's make it a big four. Because I think in terms of importance to your squad going forward, Stefan Eustáquio has got to be in the top four, I think, for me and what John Herdman is looking at going forward.
So because people are talking about this in the Discord this morning as well, you dropped in the ELO rankings where Canada's 35 and someone was saying, and we did this without our big three. If you count Larin, I think Eustáquio is three. I don't think Larin's number three on that list.
Yeah,
I think it goes Fonzie, Jonathan, David, and then Eustáquio. Part of that's position, right? Larin plays the same role as those other guys. Plus, you have the depth with Cavallini and Io behind him when they're healthy and don't have yellow cards, whatever it is. I think Eustáquio, I wouldn't have said this 5 months ago. Other people would, and maybe they watch more Portuguese football than I do, which I'm jealous of. But I don't think he was a given at all moments. And now the way you construct that midfield is, well, who's partnering him? Right. Like you're going to go into every World Cup qualifying game that you use Eustáquio in because of these The windows are shorter and you have three games each window where it used to only be two. So you will have to rotate teams. It's not going to be the same 11 every game, but the ones that Eustaquio is in, it's going to be, first of all, it's going to be the better opponents or the tougher games. And two, it's going to be, okay, how did these guys fit around him? Like, that's how influential he's made himself. And that's why I think he is that big three now for Canada.
Canada will play Mexico on Thursday night, I believe. Yeah. Mexico handily beating Honduras 3-0. They haven't conceded a goal all tournament. Ho-hum DG for a team that I think obviously Nations League lost and a lot of questions about the manager and who's available. And they probably called a stronger side than many were expecting. But after a wobbly beginning and that horrendous draw against TNT, they look primed to do what they usually do with this tournament. Is there any reason to doubt that they can handle a Canada that I think... the only negative is that no Vitória, no Cavallini. Yeah. I think Vitória probably the bigger loss here. Daniil will come in. You're looking at a daunting ask against this Mexican side.
I think if you had Vitória and Cavallini, my answer would be different than what it is. I actually, just because of the injuries to Larin and Io, I think the Cavallini one hurts more right now.
The way they play, Tesho right. doesn't do that, right? Like, he can't right. really do that style.
And you know you're going to be against the ball, but I actually think it's easier for a Daniil Henry to defend in this moment because the game's actually not going to be as open as like a Costa Rica game even would be, because you're probably going to sit in a deep block for a lot of time. So while there's a ton of work and pressure, I think it's not as hard for a center back in that role. Although it does fit Vitória's game very well, and he's been really good. He has solidified himself as a starting center back for this team in the best 11.
Which, frankly, I want to, again, a really pleasant surprise in a lot of them. I posted that ELA rating because I think it's wild to see Canada in between countries that we have just seen prominently on the world stage, whether it be Hungary, Poland, Turkey, Australia, they're right there. And the change year over year, it's 138 places. And ELO is based on who you've beaten. And you mentioned how important the Costa Rica win is. It'll change a lot for them going forward. FIFA rankings, everything else. I think a lot of the national coverage of Canada also is kind of humoristically mentioning that they were 95th in the world or 109th in the world whenever Canada was mentioned in the general news. But if you see them climb and now you see them potentially getting in the top 50, 40, whatever, it'll be big news. It's awesome. And this game Thursday night, injuries aside, I think it doesn't matter. There's some actual hope. It's not going to be maybe expectations of a blowout, which I think is progress, obviously.
No, and actually... depending on which rankings you're looking at, how they work, a loss to the U.S. and potentially a loss to Mexico, or even bigger, a victory against Mexico, sometimes actually bumps you up these rankings as well, because they're high level games. This is also a competitive competition. So like, for example, the FIFA rankings, they'll weight a Gold Cup game higher right. than they would rate a friendly. And I think you said it right. Like, there's not an expectation Canada will win. It'll be tough, but they're not going to sit deep and just hope that they stay alive. Like, I think this is a group that has some confidence and they have the ability to hurt this Mexico team. Like, Tejan's going to get out. If he's able to run, especially if Gallardo gets caught up the field, or Chaka, whoever it is, whichever wing Tejan's played on, which has been super interesting, that Herdman, he has an idea of how the shape is, but he has that level of flexibility where he comes out in the Costa Rica game and he swaps Tejan and Richie. So they're playing on the opposite wings of what we've seen most of the time. I like that, just to give a different look to an opponent. You know, Costa Rica comes in and Keisher Fuller, all of his focus is, how am I going to stop Buchanan? How am I going to get in front of him? How am I going to do this? And then you come into the game and, oh, whoa, it's a whole different role. So I like those things, you know, in those moments, as long as you don't throw your own team off. And I thought it was a good way to kind of unsettle Costa Rica off the bat. But whichever it is, Mexico has slow center backs and center backs that will struggle with someone running with you at pace. And so I think Tejan can get out and get into the open field, Richie as well, and be dangerous against this team. And then you look at, you know, a K and an Oso who can both provide that pass to push them through, but also can cover ground and be a second runner for them as well. That's where it's unfortunate that you don't have Cavallini. Cavallini is dangerous in the open field, and he also drags center backs really well to create openings for those guys to follow up. Tesho, he has the understanding of how to do a lot of that. I just don't think he's the same threat, and players just won't follow him. But you know, there's a good opening here, I think, for Canada to be competitive. The other tough thing besides the suspensions is it's going to be a home game for Mexico. Like, there's going to be whatever, 65,000-80,000 Mexico fans.
This is, again, though, it's like, all right, you can't really simulate this. It's impossible to. And it counts, I know, but doesn't count in terms of World Cup stuff. So get this in now. Just embrace it. I'm sure that'll be the message from John Herdman and co. It's going to be electric. I can't wait. That's one semifinal. The other semifinal, United States, no surprise, one of the behemoths of the region, and Qatar, the other behemoth of the region, for one night only, for an exclusive performance. But DJ, I want to start with Qatar. That El Salvador game was amazing to watch in terms of just wildness. Qatar was up 3-0, and then El Salvador off some slick goal. The second El Salvador goal was amazing. It was a slide tackle in the box that leads to the Rivas brace, but they couldn't get a third. Qatar is through. I mean, we know about their story, I guess, as an entity and why they are here. But as a team, this is not B or C Qatar, right? This is the Qatar we're going to see in a year's time at the World Cup.
No, it's their A team. And it's also why they are successful right now, because they're a cohesive group that plays a ton of time together. They train together consistently in Qatar because all the players play their club soccer in Qatar and are therefore available to train together a lot. And then they just go and play as many games as they possibly can. It's similar to what the US did going into the 1994 World Cup. A lot of the players on that team, their contracts, so different, but still they lived and played for the US men's national team. And then they played literally anyone they could find, whether national team or not, official, friendly or not, to build a level of cohesion, which is unique in the international game. So that alone is an advantage. You know, you go up against teams, especially look this year with COVID and everything, teams were coming together. Guys had never really played together. They hadn't been together in a year. And so that's Qatar's biggest advantage. And we saw it in the Asian Cup, which they won, where they were able to defend as a unit and then hit in transition. And they beat South Korea. They beat Japan. They beat a really good Iran team. That was like the first big unexpected upset, I think, in the quarterfinals of that tournament. And then you look at them come here, and Honduras has played 4 or 5 games all year. And so that's an advantage that they have against them. Panama, the same. So Qatar, I think, has done really well with all of that. The one thing about them that we've seen in this tournament is that they can't really open the game up. And so anytime, for example, the Panama first game, they started to stretch themselves to push for goals, and immediately they gave 2 up in the other direction. And so they really need the game to stay compact, whether they are dominating possession and playing as one high block or sitting deep and playing as a defensive unit. And that's for the US is going to be the key to this game. That's what you saw with El Salvador. If you could start to make the game hectic, make it a little bit frantic, lose control a little, that's probably to your advantage.
United States took care of business against Jamaica. Matthew Hoppe, late header, 83rd minute. I thought he was the best player in terms of activity, David, to the United States. Mm. But interestingly enough, like Jamaica, it seemed to me, wanted to play a compact, smaller field game. And it seems like they were able to get the United States into that. It wasn't really stretched much at all. And it really was going to take one chance like Hoppe got.
Yeah. And although Jamaica came out and they pressed, they made the game hectic. Like, this game started on fire in the first, I don't know, 30 seconds to 5 minutes. And that was all to Jamaica trying to jump on top of the US, trying to create chances. And when they pressed, they were super dangerous. We never really got a report out of it. Leon Bailey didn't play in the whole game. So clearly he's injured, or there's a minutes limit that Leverkusen gave. He's the best. He's probably the best player at this tournament. So that changed everything, and they got Decordova Reed back, and he was good in this one. But that, you can't look past that, really, even with everyone that's missing for all these teams. So that was to the advantage of the US. And then it wasn't a great performance. This isn't a great team.
Yeah.
Like, coming into this tournament, I had Mexico and Jamaica as my two favorites. And I think last week going into the quarters, I said, I think Canada has maybe a better shot at winning this than the US. Like, I just, that's not the point of this. And you always want to win, and you always want to get, like you said, with Canada playing in front of a big crowd in a knockout game, that's great experience for all these young players. You want to get as many as you can. But like, this is a team, one of the things about it, there's not a ton of creativity. And so Hoppy was good, and I agree with you. I had him down as my best player in the first half outside of Miles Robinson just because he was trying stuff. Yeah. And everyone else was like, oh, I'll just knock it back, facilitate possession. And it was like, come on, you're in transition. Like every transition moment, Legette or Costa or Busio, when they'd break through, they'd drop back, they'd drop a shoulder, they'd give it back to a center back, and they would just rotate possession again. And then finally Roldan comes on the field and he's trying stuff. And then Hoppy gets the goal as well. And Zardes was really good off the bench. DK has struggled the last two games. So there wasn't a lot going for the U.S., but that's a CONCACAF game and they won it, which is great experience for these young players. And I think this is, I think we have the record for semifinal Gold Cup appearances in the region. And I think this might be the 12th straight tournament that we've made a semifinal. So all of that is pretty great to see.
Well, final four, picks time. Who we got in the final? It would be hilarious if Qatar made the final, I think for many reasons. And the fact that we have Qatar United States will make for some interesting gymnastics in terms of allusions to human rights and what's going on there on the broadcast. I can't wait for that. But picks-wise, it looks like USA-Mexico. I know that's not sexy at all, and I want to pick Canada, but I'm not going to be super homerific. I want to be stunned, though. So if it happens, it happens. But I'll pick USA-Mexico, Mexico to win.
I think I'm on the same boat as you. I want to pick Canada. It's tough with the guys missing. And I think the U.S. will beat Qatar. I don't have like a ton of analysis of why or how. I just think
this will happen. It'll happen. It'll happen.
But like you just look at it, it's the U.S. playing in Texas in front of a home crowd in a tournament that we're used to with people who have experienced this stuff before. And I don't think there's a huge gulf in quality. There's a gulf in cohesion. But I think otherwise it's all pretty similar. And so I just think what we've seen so far this tournament and we've seen in past Gold Cups is the U.S. normally can do enough to get by. So I think it's going to be U.S.-Mexico final as well. I would be surprised if Mexico didn't win.
But yeah,
there's something mental going on with Mexico.
Give me, for the content, God, give me Canada, USA. Give me that because I will. It'll be meltdown city. We'll go back and burn down the White House again a second time and make it count. JK.
Is that I'm a joking. Wee situation?
I'm joking, guys.
Do you guys take the War of 1812?
Not really. I feel like the British really own that. They own that instance.
Can I just say, regardless of the outcome, being a Canadian and seeing them kind of be the best team on the pitch each game they've played for the most part, I'm just really proud. It's really good to see. Also, David, it's 11 straight semifinals for the USA.
Hey, so fact moving. Check.
Once, four so one Pinocchios, of the issues, Nick.
Four Pinocchios, David, on that lie.
No, Nick, I know this is tough for you. So once the rings get more than your fingers, it's hard to remember how many more you have. It's just an issue as a champion.
I would just also like to clarify, I do not want to burn down the White House. I generally support the Biden administration.
What's that?
In some matters.
FBI office, please. Yeah. His name's Devang Desai.
Not again.
Guys, by the way, I actually put my phone to my ear there and then realized there was a podcast and I didn't have to do the full skit on the bit.
Let's get out of here. Okay. That's Gold Cup. Big end of the week coming up. So semifinals Thursday, final Sunday. Could be some extra Patreon content coming up depending on who's involved. We'll talk about that later. But coming up next, MLS was going on as well this weekend. Big result for SKC, Ricardo Pepe showing out and TFC somehow edging out a result in Chicago. We talk about all of that coming up next on AFP.
Couldn't get it as it was blocked, but still alive now. Pepe, his third, it's a hat trick. Ricardo Pepe off the fingertips of Bondin in. 3 for the choo-choo train. FC Dallas 3, LA Galaxy 0. Everything is coming up Pepe tonight.
Pepe showing out for FC Dallas. Huge 4-0 result against Greg Vanney's LA Galaxy, David. It's a conveyor belt of American products coming out of MLS these days. Usually we hear about them 1 week and then they're sold off a couple weeks later. Busio going to Italy, Lele's example of that. But it seems like Pepe cannot be far behind. I actually saw this morning Bologna is starting to sniff around. But what's the deal with this guy, DG?
What, first of all, what else is Bologna doing? You're owned by a guy who owns an MLS team. Why are you not the ones buying all these dudes if they're good, especially early on?
I got Joey Saputo's facts if you want to ask him.
For sure. Ricardo Pepi, I've been on the Pepi train for 3 years now, and he's only 18. So I probably was on too early. But I've covered and watched the lower ranks and the youth leagues in the US, Mexico, and Canada for years. He's the best finisher I've ever seen at that level. And so I knew watching him that if his game didn't develop, if he didn't physically develop, at a minimum, he was going to be a good professional player because he could score goals. And that is valuable, and teams need that. And not only has he done that at the MLS level, but he's added to his game, and his runs are smarter, and he's scrappy, and he works hard. And this was his fourth straight home game that he scored in, the only one that he was playing center forward at, because he'd been playing on the wing or underneath Jara before that, which isn't his comfortable position, yet he still scores goals. And teams will value that everywhere around the world, and he'll always be successful if he can continue doing that. Incredible kid, good head on his shoulders. You talk to people at FC Dallas, and they're like, we could assign him back to North Texas today, and he would work hard and train hard and prove that he deserves to be back here rather than sulk and complain and disappear. So it's awesome to see him get this opportunity. Lucci has to keep starting him there. Har has been invisible, and now look how good Pepe's been in this. And for FC Dallas, they started four homegrowns in this game and got a 4-0 win against the Galaxy. I think Edwin Cerrillo is probably going to come back into the starting lineup as well. It could be five homegrowns game in and game out, and not just like on the field, central pieces. Your number 10, your number 9, Justin Che, who Bayern Munich tried to sign, Paxton Pomykal creating for you. This is probably the best vein of form we've seen for Paxton in a couple of years. So everything went well, but Pepe, he's done this the entire time. This isn't like a flash in the pan. This is what he's done at the MLS level, and it would shock me if he wasn't somewhere else. I've heard that Mexico feels confident he's going to come into a camp with them later this year.
Yeah.
So that part huge. Sucks as a That'd US fan.
Wow.
But also I got a little bit of flack, whatever, for saying this. Sorry for the free promotion to Slack. I erased that. Can you imagine if the L tree number 9 came through FC Dallas's academy and was born and raised in the US. For a country that has lorded their football culture over the US and the lack of knowledge, and they call players, you know, gringos that are down there and Paco Torres and Edgar Castillo and all that. If they're the holy grail of Mexico's number 9, the sacred position of Jared Borgetti and Hugo Sanchez and Chicharito, is being carried by a kid who was born and raised in the US and came through the FC Dallas and MLS system, that would be a fairly big trump card.
Some Winter Soldier action there as well. Also, shouts to Aflac as well. You could have mentioned them when you're Slack and you're rhyming stuff. Nice. Dallas, I had a question. This is perhaps out of ignorance mostly, so I apologize to our Dallas friends. But from the outside, I look at Dallas as an excellent program and a place that is creating pathways for kids to train and then get to the highest levels. And they've done it consistently now. But I mean, on the field results wise, you can say there's results lacking. And I mean, the atmosphere of the stadium's not super great. And you could argue the match day experience doesn't match what they're producing at the program. Like, is this fair to say, A, and B, like, is this okay? Like, is this now the system that they are fully down with? There's no MLS 3.0 grand visions of trying to blow it up and make it like an Austin thing. It's like, no, we make talent here. We have our stadium. It's not pretty to look at, but that's what we are.
I think the second one, I would say that the idea of continuing to sell young players is 100% not going anywhere. I think the infrastructure they've actually they've put more in. They built the Soccer Hall of Fame there over the last few years. They expanded the stadium. They built a new stand. I don't think any of that is going anywhere. And I go down there every year for stuff, so I can tell you one, not the ideal spot to have it, but one of the reasons they built it there is that that area is continuing every single year it grows. And so it's like a north suburb of Dallas, but it keeps getting bigger and bigger. And so they believe that more people will come. And if they're competitive, then the local people will come to their games. It was actually a decent crowd for this Galaxy game, I think you could see on TV. But I think, Dallas is locked into who they are. The one thing they have to figure out is you can be a selling team and a successful team in MLS. They have not hit that properly in that they've not reinvested the funds on selling always successfully. And one of the things Matt Doyle, who I work with at MLS, slams home is almost all of their international signings have missed. So it's not that they haven't spent money. They just haven't done it well. And then there's weird moments for them. Thiago Santos was their starting defensive midfielder last year. They sold him, I think, a week before the season because they got a good offer from Brazil. And they flipped him for double what they bought him for a 31-year-old. That's great. You know, you're going to make $500,000, $1 million on a sale. That's great. But there was no succession plan. And if the idea was, well, we think we can compete for MLS Cup, then no, you can't sell him there, right? Because now it's taken them 6 months to bring Quinone in. He's got to settle in. You've had a mess trying to get through on the way. So I don't think there's a clear identity from top down, ownership down, of what it looks like to be a selling club that's successful. I don't think it's impossible. I just don't think they've perfected it.
Biggest results of the weekend, you can argue. I know a lot of teams are missing guys in the true sense of that word for SKC and Seattle, but this was probably the biggest game in Seattle, Lumen Field. SKC going in with a huge 3-1 result. Johnny Russell, really nice fake out, free kick goal. Cameron Duke, the icing on the cake. Missing guys, but I think and Seattle starting like 12-year-olds midweek and getting a result was amazing. And like they keep doing amazing, cool shit because they're Seattle. But I mean, SKC, I think this matters. Like, I know they're missing players and like these are not the A teams for both clubs, but I think you've got Rui Diaz, you've got the influential members of the Sounders there, and SKC went in and played, I think, the style that they believe can carry them very deep later on in the season, like we've seen many times from Vermees outfits. Like, they'll lose Busio, but to me, it seems like they'll be all right going forward, DG.
I agree with you. And one of the proofs with the Busio thing is, well, they were able to win. That, you know, they've been able to get results this week without him. So I agree with you. And I also think for SKC, I think this is a team that legit has a shot at Supporters Shield. They're 3 points back right now. Points per game, I actually think they might even be equal or closer. And so at a minimum, just maintaining results now, even whatever it looks like, whoever's in the team, until you get a Pulido back and whoever else comes back from international call-ups or injuries, whatever, just sets you up for a potential run for that Supporter Shield. And having the identity is huge, but also the depth they have. I mean, you talk about homegrowns. I think there's 13 homegrowns on their roster. Not all of them are ready to play now.
Wow.
But they can be options. Cam Duke can come off the bench. Cam Duke looked really good against San Jose midweek, playing as the 10, filling in for Busio. He looks silky on the ball. He looks clean. They started Harris at center forward in that game. Jalen Lindsay's been a big piece of what they've done. Kava Rod's given them minutes when Ismet Marin's been injured. So like it extends your team even deeper than what it could be with signings. And then that keeps you where you need to be when a Pulido is missing, when a Remy Walter takes time to get comfortable, when a Busio's away with the national team, whatever it is that keeps you in competition. And so I don't think it was a statement win saying Casey's better than Seattle. Casey has the upper hand on Seattle, but it was a necessary 3 points, especially if you look at, well, you might be in a head-to-head battle for Supporter Shield.
The game of the weekend, sorry, scratch everything I said about SKC Seattle. It was clearly Toronto FC Chicago down at Soldier Field. Battle of the Titans. Titans of the Eastern Conference.
Does it count as a game of the week if no one's there?
What's hilarious, so George Springer on the Jays, baseball talk, made an amazing catch right at the same time as Jefferson Soteldo scored against Chicago, and I'm like, this will be a good night, this will be fun to watch. It was fun, but for different reasons. TFC missing Justin Morrow right before the game. So Luke Singh's brought in. They had injury problems already with Nooro. So basically it was Marky Delgado at right back, Luke Singh at left back, and Omar and Chris Mavinga at center back, which spelt for Manchester City like ball possession display from Chicago Fire, but nothing really to show for it. TFC 1-2-1, one of the stranger games I've watched, but positives because I'm trying to live more positive these days. Nice. Soteldo's finish, like, I know the play looked a little broken, but like, we're waiting for the final product. He does everything else, literally everything else. The ball at his feet, it's magic to watch. But that final product, you saw the silk there. He made that look easy. Wonderful to see. And Nick DeLeon, the weirdest story, I think, going right now in terms of unvaxxed and now with the team in the United States. It didn't look like too many teammates got that close to him in a celebration. So hopefully we can keep everyone within the proper proximities for social distancing for the vax and unvax. And I'm being serious there because I was freaked out when they went to celebrate that goal with him.
Yeah, I think someone did hug him, but we don't know how the rules work and all that. But yeah, he's not allowed in Canada right now. So he's an away player.
What is happening?
Which is so bizarre.
What is happening? I joke about this, but like, what? What is happening?
Well, Montreal traded Eric Hurtado for the same reason.
Yeah.
He couldn't be available to them. Why would you want him on your roster? DeLeon's had some good moments. I think once Oso's back, you don't really need him because now Endo gets pushed to the bench. Fingers crossed, Richie comes back again. Although we've heard the Besiktas rumors, but you get a couple players back. Now you've got some depth. You've got Delgado in central midfield. You could slide Oso around. You've got Endo off the bench. You've got Jaden Nelson, like all these guys. It's just they're thin right now. So I think they feel like they should still use him. But this right now, this is a team that just needs the points. It doesn't even matter what it looks like. Yeah. And so that's what it is. Now, I will say the confidence you're getting from a Soteldo, and I thought Josie looked comfortable again as well. And when the ball's at his feet, he still looks like Josie Altidore. I think those were all positive signs. And you got to say, two games, Marky Delgado can fill in that right back. Like, he looks fine there.
And we've been talking about the goalie debate and Quinn Westbrook versus Alex Bono, and pretty adamant early on in the season that Q probably deserved a shot instead of Alex. But boy, oh boy, man of the match performance and then some, and redeeming maybe some of the faith Chris Armas had in Alex Bono. Because I think coming out of this game, I mean, TFC simply survived. I think Javi Perez pretty much said so after the game. That's what these games are about right now, because they still have a lot in front of them in terms of what is on the table points-wise, but they have so much to make up. And even now, they're still in 11th place with the Chicagos and Cincinnati's of the world, right? So really ugly, not pretty to look at, but Alex Bono was incredible. And for his sake, I think it's a huge plus.
They're undefeated since Javi Perez has been the coach. And so I think just to keep that momentum, even if some have been ties when they should have been wins, I think that's huge for this club, because you can't just right now, you can't look at the points and say, this is where we have to be. You really have to take it slowly and just continue to get results and allow that stuff to sort of figure itself out. And so this was one of those games. You get the early goal. Okay, fine. You can protect it. It's a Chicago team, you know, that's going to give up opportunities the other way because they're a mess defensively. But they do look pretty when they're able to possess the ball, especially at home. So it kind of fell into those game states for Toronto, and I think that's fine. Now you go home, you play Nashville, which is a game where you should probably control a ton of the ball. But they're you know, more stout and tougher defensively. So I think right now for them, it's just game to game, as you said, surviving, hoping that you get healthier and more complete coming out of some international stuff and starting to see what the roster looks like.
That's MLS roundup for this week. The CPL has wrapped their bubble in Winnipeg. 8 games in for every club involved. We saw leaders Valor fall to Wanderers 1-0 over the weekend. York United, huge 1-0 result. Isaiah Johnston, wonderful moment for him, getting his CPL first goal in the 12th minute. 1-0 over FC Edmonton. So Jimmy Brennan's side, injury depleted like a lot of the clubs. I think, sadly, David, as we exit the bubble, we're seeing a lot of teams missing fairly important players. And you're seeing a lot of guys have having to gut out pretty intense injuries and cramping just based on how many games they've played in Winnipeg. And I think one of the stories we've heard since the bubble has wrapped is some players voicing some of the issues they had with the accommodations, the facilities, what they had access to, no air conditioning on buses, inadequate meals, players talking about not having an ability to talk with the league about what they were getting into when this bubble was announced. And now it sounds like there could be some sanctions for players wearing t-shirts before games last week, voicing support for a players union, which I think has been top of mind for many CPL fans this week. So far, it doesn't sound like the league is interested in really talking with them. I mean, labor negotiations are not easy. I understand that. But I think for myself, speaking on this podcast, I will say I'm in voice and support of the players speaking up and trying to get some say and some involvement in what goes on with the decision making in this league. I think they're totally within their rights to do so. And I know not every injury or not every instance is a product of this schedule or where they were. But I think if you look at some of the situations that ended up with Andre Jean-Baptiste being lost for the year and being such an important guy for Valor, like, you're losing important players, and I think you're having the right players speak up in this league that want better. So it's definitely worth hearing them out.
I fully agree with you. I'm in favor of workers' rights everywhere, but especially in this scenario. But the biggest thing that stands out to me is, why would you not want the players to have a voice, one, for their buy-in, and two, just so you know what they need? Like, you need them at the table to an extent. And obviously the thought process always from the top is, oh, well, then they're going to ask for too much and we're not going to put them in suites for every game. It's like, that's not the conversation. But the conversation is, how can you allow these players to give you the best product to sell? And even if it's just little things like, well, what if we had a physical trainer here? What if we had the game's match time start at a different time for Heat? Just those conversations alone, you need that side of it. Like, that's, you know, that is what you're building as a soccer league. And the soccer players need to be a part of that conversation. The league is too young for there to have been retired players who have risen up high enough to be a part of that. You need these players to have the opportunity to build this. And so it's mind blowing to me that that wouldn't even be a thought process. I echo your thoughts in support of the players. And I think you've seen actually a couple of politicians come out and follow up after these, after the t-shirts and after the conversation about a union, supporting them as well. So we'll see how that pressure stands. But one thing to throw out there, which is weird to me, this bubble was obviously different than the bubble we saw last year, both in Canada and the US, because COVID restrictions are a little different. But both of the home bubble teams, there wasn't one in the island games, but there was one at MLS's back, and here had a ton of success, and both were unexpected.
That's right.
And I wonder if there is a level of mentality that you're home, that we just can't even quantify, even in these moments without a crowd, without an atmosphere, where you're still living in the bubble. You're not even living at home. It's bizarre.
Super interested to see how Valor does going forward, because I think that's totally fair. It's totally fair to say. And honestly, I'm not saying they're surprised, but I think even they have to be a bit pinching themselves in terms of standing top of the table, leaving now the bubble for home matches, which is super exciting. Matches in home markets, York United, Forge, Pacific Cavalry on Friday, FC Edmonton Valor Saturday, Wanderers Atletico Monday, all kicking off as the CPL continues on outside of the bubble. All right, that is MLS CPL. When we come back, we close up shop with the mailbag, Ask AFP.
Welcome back, and it's now time for everyone's favorite segment, Ask AFP. Thanks to everyone who sent their questions this week. If you didn't get the chance to send your own question, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. Our first question goes to Matt from Patreon, and this is a real long one here. I think he had a little bit of a rant to say. So, with all of these outgoing transfers, has MLS created a monster? Being a selling league is fine, but this is happening much faster than I think most people expected. Is the league bleeding talent and thus undermining the quest to be a top quality league in the world? Does this hurt MLS trying to overtake Liga MX in Champions League? And Liga MX tend to keep their homegrown talent, or at least keep them longer than what seems to be happening in the MLS. What are your thoughts, David?
So first of all, well written, Matt.
Very well done.
I disparage Nick's Nick's rant comment, because I thought that was actually really well done. And I agree with everything he's saying. So I think just to hit a couple of these points early, one, Liga MX does keep players for a really long time. And I think you're actually seeing it at the national team level be to a detriment to them and to the success of the US and Canada. And when you look at, obviously, Mexico's in the Olympics, which is great. They put a ton of stock into playing the oldest players at every youth age limit, and they also play a ton of warm-up games going into these tournaments so that they can be competitive at a U17, 20, and 23 level. But they don't have the players that are already playing in Europe and getting high-level competition like the US and Canada does. And you can see the worry and the frustration, hence me talking about Ricardo Pepi potentially being the center forward and not JJ Macias right now because of the way their careers are going at such a young age. I think for MLS, I can understand the statement saying, well, if you want to be a top whatever league in the world that Don Garber is saying today, because it'll be different tomorrow and it was different yesterday, but whatever number you pick, you want to be a top league. You want all the talent in your league that you can have. But I think for MLS, it's actually been more important to enter the world market and to be a team that's consistently in conversations, and the flow of players happening as it increases out, it has also increased in. And because of the movement now, you're in conversations with agents and clubs. And so you can go from selling Busio to saying, oh, so-and-so is available, or, oh, you're about to clinch that move. Can I maybe go over to that club and see if they're thinking about selling this guy instead? And so one of the things I think you've seen is more quality coming into MLS just because MLS is entering that world market. And so you've got players leaving in the January transfer window. Well, who's looking for playing time? Who's available? Can they come back in the other way? So we've seen more loans to MLS of quality young players. We've seen more players willing to come here, young players, because they know that the possibility to being sold is happening. And so now you're looking at Atlanta talking to the best young player in Argentina because he knows that he can then use that as a stepping stone. And you also have players who come here and then decide that they're going to stay, yeah, or players that go to Europe and it doesn't work out and they're willing to come back. Sebastian Legette, Emerson Heineman, Bjorn Johnson, all these guys were in Europe, and because they're part of the world market now, MLS is a viable option to come here for maybe a half year, maybe a year. Then it becomes your career, whatever it is. I think all of that strengthens MLS overall.
I think I'm kind of with Matt. Whenever I see like explosive growth, I get concerned because it's usually behind some nefarious companies doing terrible shit that it's like, wow, this is so great, but it's destroying everything slowly. But I think generally this is good. And I think the idea of just being seen like a place to be, like David is alluding to, is important. Like if you're at MLS, you will be seen and you will be known and exposed and have a chance to further your horizons however you wish, whether that be going to Europe or something else, which is possible. In the same sense though, like Chris Mueller going to Hibs, David, like, is that positive? Like, do you think that is a positive pipeline move to me? Cause I find that interesting in the sense that like, is he developing any better that over there than he would be with Orlando?
No, Chris Mueller going to Hibs is two things to me. One, it's an indictment on the structure of Major League Soccer that he can't get a competitive salary offer in this continent because it's a closed league. So the only thing he can do once Orlando offers him a deal is leave and go to Europe. So I think it's an indictment on that. And then, but I do think there's value in, even if it's off the field, players being pushed. And so I think there is value in leaving home and living somewhere else, right? And fitting in. And we've seen it has helped and hurt players. So it's not a guarantee. But I think the one thing that may develop Chris Mueller is going over to a new country and finding himself. I don't think the soccer he's being taught or the level he's playing at will make him better. But I've already seen Brendan Aaronson's a better player today than he was a year ago. And I think a lot of that was just leaving home. Right. And going to Salzburg and challenging himself. Salzburg, the level is worse than it is in MLS. But that the mentality he's had to create has made him a better player already. So I think there's value in that. But I think with Mueller, if it was an open league, I think he'd be playing for Austin, or he'd be playing for Chicago, or he'd be playing for LAFC. I think other people would have offered him money, but that's not the way it's set up.
Tim asks, have you watched any Olympic soccer? And if so, who are you cheering for?
Of course, Canada women are two games through. I think they play Great Britain on the 27th.
Who
which
knows
is
what
the day.
Anything's happening,
I think
by
that's
the way.
Tomorrow. I think,
oh, yeah. The time-wise? Oh, my God.
My daily experience, the Vang, has been sitting watching primetime and saying, is this live? When did this happen? Live? Is this live?
Is this live? And I've noted that the networks are being very... very selective of when they put that live button up. I rarely see it, even when things are live, because I guess they don't want to keep the illusion alive. But I believe by the time this has come out, Canada will have played Great Britain in their third group stage match. But great, fun beginning game against Japan. Really nice goal from Iwabushi was the equalizer, but since he got on the board, and then Janine Becky responded after a tough game against Japan with a brace against a good, improving Chile side. So they have a chance to top the group against Great Britain. I think, I don't know, to get super deep into the complexities of the Canadian midfield and where they should play Ashley Lawrence, but I feel like there's some interesting parallels between the men's team where they were a couple years ago and where maybe the women's team is now, and where they have a collection of players that are getting better, and you see the quality obviously on display, but it's maybe where are they playing them properly, or where are they using them, and are these questions Beth Friesman can answer sooner rather than later. So that's who I'm watching going forward.
I was a little surprised by the performance against Chile, but at the same time, one of the things about the Olympics that's tougher than the World Cup is with the smaller field, you don't have as much time to settle. So if you can get results early when you're not playing your best in an Olympic setup, it bodes really well. Because in the World Cup, with the expanded field and the third place teams getting through, we've seen, I can say this, for example, the U.S. Women's National Team lost three World Cups, limp early, and then find your form because you're good enough to get through. But now you look at the Olympics and the U.S. gets smoked by Sweden in the first round, and now you're in a must-win game. Obviously, the goal differentials helped for the U.S., but we're now in a must-win game against Australia because you don't have the weaker teams in your group. You don't have a Thailand to sort of like get your legs under you. So I think Canada getting the result against Chile, even though it wasn't their best performance, was huge. And there's so much talent in there. I'm obviously rooting for the U.S. And Canada on both sides. On the men's side, I have a fondness for Brazil and the way they value and care about the Olympics on a soccer point of view. And I thought it was really cool when they won it in the Maracanã last time and how much it mattered.
Yeah.
And just to send Richarlison to a tournament like this, right?
I don't know
if you saw the video of Danny Alves.
Richarlison has easily the greatest goal celebrations in terms of how unhinged he seems to be for 20 seconds. Like, he looks like he is uncontrollable. He's lost. It's love it. I love the passion. I'm totally with you there. I watched the Brazil-Germany game on the men's side. And I'm like, this Brazil team is like a Premier League caliber squad playing these random German guys. I'm just housing them. I'm like, this is Olympics, baby. I love it.
The best roster for the men's side is the Spain team. It's ridiculous.
Danny Ceballos,
so it'll
baby. Danny Ceballos.
It'll be a disappointment. Pau Torres.
I feel like they sent some of these guys as punishment for shaving them, I think.
Maybe. If they don't win it, I think it'll be an upset, but it's also a knockout tournament, so you never know what's going to happen.
What are the rules exactly on terms of players
three,
going? I always thought it was just one over 23-year-old. No,
three over 23. Okay. Yeah. But the clubs are not required to release their players because it's not technically a FIFA event. So even if you're under 23, it's like for a Gold Cup, let's say Atiba Hutchinson wants to come. Besiktas is not allowed to say no. They could be mad about it, and it would be worse off for Canada in the long run because then they'll deny allowing him to leave early for other stuff, whatever. You're not allowed to say no. For the Olympics, you can say no. So not only is it 23, you then also have to get the buy-in, so it's tough to even get your best U23 players.
They got new Spurs wonder kid Brian Heal there too.
Yeah.
Speaking of Spurs, Robbie asks, is Harry Kane really going to City?
Great transition, Nick. What a perfect timing. I think so. It's just the number. Tottenham,
oh God.
If they hit the number Tottenham wants, he's gone. It's all on City.
This is legit an arms race now, though. If you have Varane now looking like that's locked to Manchester United, you see the jostling going on between the top guys. I don't if Man City needs Harry Kane or not, like obviously they do. I think that they are missing nine, let's be honest here. But like whether they need to spend this much money on that person, but in terms of optics and going all in on what should be $1 million Premier League campaign. I'd love to see it. This should be very interesting.
Here's a thought. Tottenham uses the money from Harry Kane to bring in Paul Pogba.
Good and
now
Lord.
It's the big
Good
three.
Lord. Why do you hate Paul Pogba, man? What did he do to you?
True. I don't know that Ole is the guy for him.
Go PSG, right? I feel like that's going to happen as well. There's not a lot of time left. We are talking about all these deals. The season starts in like 2 days. Goddamn.
I think the Belgian league kicked off
did.
A few days ago.
I saw it on DAZN.
Bundesliga 2 is playing.
I turned on DAZN and it was on. And I'm like, I can't watch Club Brugge just yet. I need to ease back into this.
And finally, a question for me, because I think it's funny. What would you do if you were sitting at an Atlanta United game, you know, having fun, just hanging with your buddies with a few beers, and you saw Kanye West behind you in full face covering? How would you react? Because those photos are hilarious.
Amazing. Photos are amazing. Honestly, with the stocking, a bit alarming. It's like an art exhibit come to life. I saw the greatest tweet was like Kanye's doing the divorced dad at the Phantom of the Opera bit. It's at games now. I don't know. I don't know if I'd be normal. I think I would like to imagine I would be. I think I would be chill, but also like I'd probably ask for a photo just to how bizarre everything is.
I'd probably say, what the... is Kanye West doing behind me? Would be so my initial reaction.
The story is that he did the Apple Music release, like the announcement for his new album.
Yeah.
But the story is that he's now living in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The Columbus crew had to use an auxiliary visitor's room because Kanye was using the visitor's dressing room. Yeah, his team.
Wow.
He's saying the vibes are good, so he's not going to leave till he finishes the album. So they hired one of the Mercedes-Benz Stadium chefs to be his chef while he's there and he's hanging out.
I wanted to see BWP's face when he walked in. It's like, yeah, you know what? This is logical. Like, this makes sense to me. And he goes to that locker room.
Well, even if you ordered him a beer, he's got a face mask on, so he can't even drink it properly. I don't know. Yeah, a lot of questions.
I don't think me and Kanye West would be friends.
No, so. I don't think so either. And a lot of revisionist history with this new album coming out, and he's back with Jay, and it's like, let's all forget the MAGA shit and
for
all
sure.
the other. But, you know. Artists are complicated, but I don't think I'd be friends with them either. Maybe a photo though, because I'm shameless like that. And again, I'd like to reiterate, love the White House, wonderful building. Keep that thing going up, Sarah, so hard and strong. Keep that baby up. 4 more years. Okay, that is it. Another episode of AFP in the books. A reminder, a rating or a review wherever you get this podcast would be wonderful for us. It gets this pod into more people's ears. We're also on Twitter. @AFootballPod and of course on patreon.com/AFootballPodcast. Get the pod early, exclusive episodes, Discord access, ad free, all that there on the Patreon. For producer Dylan, for Nick, and for David, thank you so much for listening to AFP. We'll talk to you next week.